Chapter 79. Sylvie was in her office putting some final touches on details for the gala event for Stella Green and Sat Reifield that would take place in New York in a couple of days. Thousands of people had registered. Holdfast had been in hiding since hearing about Shinigami. Sylvie had a pretty good idea where he might be, but he'd apparently gone offline when he realized that anything with an electrical circuit could be used to track him. She'd tried to reach him numerous times via different methods, but he would not respond. She was irked at this because he was scheduled to be one of the primary speakers at the celebration of life for Green and Reifield. They had managed to bury the story about Garamond, and she didn't want to connect Kapiri in any way with the council until she absolutely had to. She was still doing her best to follow Holdfast's orders so that he would believe that she was here to help him and not pursue him like prey. She didn't know about Shinigami, but for that matter, it's unlikely that anyone else would either. Sylvie paused for a few moments and looked around her room. She still bristled at the idea that someone might label her den an evil lair. That had always felt to her like a cold and uninteresting way to describe a place where everything happens in a story. The warehouse office was her comfort zone. Men had their man caves, and women had their shisheds or ladies' lair. She preferred the term femdome, implying an area protected from all things related to mansplaining. She loved the way that she was able to feel nostalgic about her life and successes, and her private space reflected that. To her, her femdome felt like an old anarchist's record shop tucked away in an upper-level loft in a fashion district. The walls were plastered with her old posters from different bands. The shelves held icons of gods and monsters that she worked very hard to understand. For music, she would play Bernie Krause's seminal work on tracking and understanding bioacoustics in a wild sanctuary. Krause was the person who introduced synthesized sound on the Moog in the 1960s to people like The Doors, The Beatles, The Stones, and so on. He got into his true calling of recording natural environments because, he said, "The sound of the natural world is the voice of the divine. We've learned our music from nature." She was playing it on a record player, of course, with a collection of custom speakers that would still emit sounds that were well outside the human range of hearing. The sounds of animals were everywhere and nowhere. Her life's work had finally hit its stride when she gave up on protesting and started programming. She had applied for a few work gigs and couldn't believe her good fortune when Hector Holdfast had announced that he was hiring a new deputy chief technology officer for one of his many subsidiaries. Mind you, she did use her own talents to tweak some of the resumes and the review process along the way, so not getting the job would have been her own fault. She just had to make sure there were no breadcrumbs left. Once she was in, she took the long, slow, steady approach to the top of the food chain. It felt fucking glacial at times, but she knew she could wait it out. She had to. One evening back in 2003, when she was lonely and angry, she had forced herself to accept that humans were incapable of changing their ways. They would never be able to steer away from the abyss, and they certainly wouldn't invest any serious effort into communicating with other non-human creatures. She was eventually proven wrong about the latter part. But the necessary discoveries wouldn't come soon enough to save the planet or change the behavior of humans. The real lightning bolt moment was when she heard a lecture on the caves of Lascaux, France. These caves contained some of the greatest examples of Neolithic paintings by humans. As she listened to the lecturer, the first thing she realized was that cave paintings in places like Lascaux and in thousands of other locations represented humans creating art for the first time in our history. Furthermore, she understood that the stories depicted in the caves were not about shamans or other male-dominated rituals or activities. They were records of when the men came into the caves to assault and capture the women who were hiding from their wrath. The sad irony wasn't lost on her. She knew that women's struggles for survival had been depicted on cave walls thousands of years ago. When these caves were discovered over the last 200 years or so, the art they contained had been grossly misunderstood, because on most occasions, it was male archaeologists trying to make heads or tails of what the images might mean. Men couldn't grasp the possibility that the painters might have been women and even children depicting their anger about their mistreatment and the disdain that men had for them. She was appalled and saddened by the fact that, even back then, something as beautiful as the act of childbirth could be mistaken for witchcraft or reverie. She learned that there had once been a gentler time of calm and balance between the genders and among all living creatures, but it didn't take long after humans' emergence from the caves for men to flex their muscles and develop patriarchal systems that would minimize the value of all things except themselves. Sylvie Hunter had understood that it was time for change. It was time for balance to be restored, not just between all genders, but also between humans and all living creatures. She had developed Gaia in 2004 and kept it to herself as she understood the full magnitude of its power, even back then. Every day she added new elements and capabilities to Gaia, and through her hard work and effort, they both became stronger. Now, as she sat in her office, Sylvie reflected on what AI might mean to humanity and where it could take us. "We're fooling ourselves," she said to herself, her screens and Gaia, who then spoke with her in unison again. "We think AI will be just another tool that will make our lives easier, like how the car translated to less walking and not wearing down shoes so quickly. Look at what an avalanche of internal combustion engines got us. Carbon. Or how automated trading brought us efficient profits and quick returns. Until 2008. Or how plastics made food storage easier and safer, until they clogged our ocean. We applied the magic of pesticides and herbicides to make food production more efficient. All this did was encourage humans to breed like fucking rabbits and eat ourselves poor while killing every green, living thing that threatened our supply. Since the beginning, we've always been too stupid to realize that all our inventions eventually destroy us. We're fooling ourselves. The change is coming." Gaia and Sylvie concluded, "The change is here."